Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing. It can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates.
Happy album release day to me. Happy album release day to me. My 7th album, which is called Hannah, finally got released today. Lovely, wasn't that? Yeah, I am speaking to you from Friday the 2nd of June, and finally my 7th album is out in the world. I say finally because I've never been a super speedy person with album turnarounds, but even for me, this is pretty spectacular. Started writing it January 2020. Should have been so straightforward, but it wasn't. But it ended up being a different album because of what was going on in the world, and I'm grateful for having made it. It's been lovely, and I'm just really excited to put it out there finally and have all these new songs to play with. And yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling a little bit, not frazzled, that's the wrong word. I actually feel quite chilled today, but I do feel a bit like, woo, because the last little while has been so busy. And I hate it when people say they're busy. I find it quite annoying. Like, normally if I'm feeling busy, I don't say I'm busy. I say, oh, I'm spread a bit thin at the moment. Because basically, you know, sometimes when I'm doing a lot, I just feel like I can't quite keep up with myself and I make silly mistakes. But I have to say, it has been quite hectic. It's just quite hard to kind of take in each individual moment sometimes. You know, this time 2 weeks ago, I was flying to Mexico. Then I came back. Then I did a lovely live recording on my mum's podcast. Then I went and did a gig in France. Then I went and did a gig in London. Then I went to visit Richard's parents in the Ashdown Forest, took all the kids. It was very nice, actually. Kids played a lot. Then we took them on a boat. Then we had to come back because sadly we went to a funeral. Then we went back on the boat, a couple of days on the boat. Then I went up to Manchester last night, came back today, going to the circus tonight. That'd be fun. Tomorrow, going to Dublin, back tomorrow night, Sunday brunch on Sunday morning, then Mighty Hoopla on Sunday evening. Monday, kids are back at school. Breathe. I'm not showing off. I'm just busy. But like, yeah, feeling a bit bamboozled. But it's all good. This is where I'm at. And I always say it would be horrible to release an album and have an empty diary. So this is definitely not a complaint. This is not a complaint. Did I start the podcast like this last week? I feel like I did. Maybe I do need to take a beat. Anywho, yes, what did I want to talk to you about? So I mentioned I went to a funeral, and I don't know about you, but sometimes with a funeral, I was really looking forward to going to this funeral because I knew it would give me the space and the time to really process and think about who has recently died, which very sadly is Dan from The Feelings' mum, Kath. Now, if you've been listening to my podcast for a little while, you might remember the conversation I had with Kath. So it's Kath Gillespie-Sells. I think it was way back in the first series. It might have been second. Out of all 100 and whatever conversations I've had, I would put the conversation I had with Kath up there at the very top. It was just incredible. If you haven't listened to it, sometimes people will say to me, oh, I haven't heard a new podcast. Which one do you recommend? And I always say Kath's. Her story was remarkable. She was a remarkable woman. And she basically left the planet better than she found it. And I just think as a legacy, what an incredible thing. Also, so loved. There was so much love in the room when we went to celebrate her life. And her three sons spoke really well. And yeah, just really moving. Kath was found herself by the age of late 20s, disabled after a freak occurrence, really. She got a splinter at work when she was a nurse. And she, from the splinter, she got sepsis, which led to complications, which led to an immuno sort of disorder that meant that she would have these flare-ups. So sometimes be in a wheelchair, sometimes be on crutches. A lot of pain throughout her life. She also, after having her first two sons, realised that being straight wasn't for her. And, excuse me, she started relationships with women. And the way she speaks about that in the conversation we had is exceptional. Just like it was like an awakening. She then, through getting herself to Pride marches, decided that she wanted to campaign to make it easier for disabled members of the LGBTQ plus community to get access to Pride. Remember, this is in the 80s when Prides had a real political edge and were really important and significant people to get to. Not saying they're not now, but the 80s was really a time where Pride had an agenda. And so she set up a charity called Regard, and through that got an MBE. So a really amazing life. There's more to it than that. Listen to the podcast if you get a chance. It's an amazing tribute to her life that we have that recording. Very special. And yeah, so it's been, yeah, a week of lots of different emotions. It was lovely to then go on the boat with the babies. We took the little three on a boat, Richard and I, like had a little poodle up and down the Thames for a couple of days of half term. And it's so still. You just sit on the water, you see little ducks, you can look at all people's houses and their gardens. It's good if you're nosy like me. And it was just very, very, very chilled and little time to be a bit reflective before then getting back on the wagon. We're talking about the album, all that. So, you know, lots of different things going on. And actually, come to think of it, that's probably why I've said I feel a little bit bamboozled, because I think sometimes if your emotions are kind of being pulled in different directions, then that can be the way that you feel at the end of it. But overall, I'm feeling really positive. And I do think if you ever go to the funeral of someone who sort of lived life really well and leaves a lot of love behind, then it's very inspiring and makes me want to be a bit braver because of her. And yes, where are we at for today? So today's guest is a really lovely woman called Gemma Bird, who I think I first discovered through one of those suggested posts on Instagram, actually. And I found myself watching something that she was talking about, and I really found her compelling. She's Essex born and bred, mother of two, and she has brilliant money saving tips, and she speaks from the heart. She paid off her mortgage. She is very keen for people to feel they've got some agency over their cash, and wants to try and demystify being, you know, feeling competent with your money and with your funds. So she's a regular on Lorraine's Saver Squad. She's got a book out that's called Money Mum Official, Save Yourself Happy. She's really keen to arm people with the knowledge of how to make the pennies sort themselves out so that the pounds take care of themselves. So I actually went to meet her, I think it was January now, in Essex in her lovely house. And we just had a really good conversation. She was very open as well about her struggles with anxiety and depression. And just all in all, a very open person, but very warm. We got on immediately. I met her husband, Adam. He made me and our producer, Claire, some hot cross buns. Just all good stuff. And she's got some tips for you if you find money intimidating, if you feel like you're in a bit of a pickle. There are websites in the caption on the podcast and also in the blurb on Insta so that you can find places to get some help. And yeah, sorry, I've waffled on for quite a long time. Now over to Gemma and I. This is while we're drinking tea and pre-hot cross buns. They came at the end. All right, see you on the other side. I'm so happy to meet you, Gemma. It's so funny because when I reached out to you on Instagram, I DM'd you after I was looking at your brilliant post on Instagram, and I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to jump in. And I was so like happy and also really surprised when I got this amazing, enthusiastic voice note back. I feel like we've met before.
Yeah, I mean, I do love a voice note. Where I'm dyslexic, I voice note everybody. And I felt like I'd won the lottery when Sophie Ellis-Bextor just appeared in my DMs. I'm not going to lie. So I was really excited. I was like, what is happening today?
Well, you know, the voice note thing is interesting because it actually makes you feel like you sort of fast track through a few stages of the getting to know you bit.
Yeah.
Because you kind of go back and forth, and it's like when you've got a conversation going, you feel like you know someone better.
Definitely. So, I like a voice note.
I
think
do
it's
too.
More personal as well. Like you get to know that person's character and
exactly
more their thoughts and what they're like and what they're about,
yeah.
I think.
It's more colourful as well, isn't it? You can hear the inflection in someone's voice and their happiness. And what's up with you at the moment? Where do I find you today? What you're doing at the moment?
So you can find me on Instagram, which is Money Mum Official. I'm also on TikTok as well, although I don't know what the hell I'm doing on that. I just post the same stuff on that I do on my Instagram. So more my Instagram. And I'm doing stuff at the moment on Lorraine, part of their Saver Squad. So I go on there quite regularly and give sort of everyday tips for everybody, not just mums, even though I'm called Money Mum. It's just a catchy name. It's for everybody. I'm about all including all walks of life.
And did it surprise you how things have sort of snowballed with your tips?
Yeah, it has. It has and it hasn't, because I'm sort of a go-getter in life. Like, I came home one day after speaking to somebody that did social media, and they were like, oh, you know, I'm on social media and I get to go to these events. And I that side of it, I was like, wow, imagine that. And I thought, well, no one on social media is sharing, like, money tips or seeing the other side of it. Like, I'm not wealthy. I can't keep up and be every single day putting on a Prada handbag every single day and going out and showing that and these fancy pictures. So I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to do a page where I just share everyday tips. Like, if I'm in Tesco's and there's Pampers that are cheaper or whatever it is I'm looking at, I'm going to just share deals and money tips and things like, I'll rent my driveway out to earn extra cash. Why pay extra for this? And if I do want to design a bag, I'm going to outlets and, you know, try and move away from it. Them just looking at influencers and celebrities, because it could be that they're on amazing money and it's not real everyday life. It's nice to look and it's lovely to see it and watch it, those lives, because it's interesting, of course it is. But there's also, I felt like there needs to be a realness to social media. So I thought, I'm just going to start it and see how it goes. And I thought, and another reason I started it, I thought, well, it's free to start being Money Mum. I thought, I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I've only got my time to lose. And I thought, I'm just going to really give it a go. And obviously, I'm really pleased I did, because it's been amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it has seemed to have resonated on so many levels. And I think, I mean, does it surprise you how many people find sort of a fundamental approach to, you know, keeping an eye on their cash really difficult?
Yes and no again, because all my life, my friends have sort of said to me, like, why aren't you coming out? It's only a tenner, it's only 20 quid when I've been saving. They're like, you've got savings, why are you not coming out? Because I'm like, because I'm saving up, say, for my first car, or saving up to get on the property ladder or whatever that was. And I always used to be like, it's just a tenner, Gem, it's just 20 quid. And I've always felt like, yeah, but £10 after I go to work, after tax and national insurance, that takes me an hour to earn that money, for example. So to me, it's always been, I've looked at other people and I've always thought so many sort of friends that I've known along the years haven't had the regards to that money.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I'm not particularly shocked, because I'm a real believer that the little things add up to the big things. Like, people, you don't just make loads of money. It's through savings and investments, you know. So
yeah. It's
like saving up that little bit of money to maybe buy that thing that might turn into more money. It's a lot of choices. Obviously, at the minute, there's a cost of living crisis. So it's very different at the minute. But over the years, when I've been younger, I've definitely noticed that I was different to other people in that way.
And I suppose some of that's a bit of a slow burn thing, because the things that you value, I mean, we're pretty much the same age, and so we're both in our early 40s, and the things that you value now, the security now, that back 20 years ago, you know, where you're... Do you want to sneeze?
Yeah, sorry.
Just do it. I'm actually quite impressed you've sneezed, because sometimes when I tell people I'm going to sneeze, I don't sneeze.
Oh, well, I did think that. I was like, if I don't now sneeze...
Sneezing's fine, we will edit out.
Oh, God, I get like sneezing fits, sorry. Right, stop.
My husband's like that. He only sneezes in threes.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
It's really funny.
Sorry. I was like, oh no, I'm going to sneeze. I better tell
you. Don't worry about it. It's fine. It's a bit of a slow burn thing, what you're describing there, because now that we're in our early 40s, the happiness that you find from feeling secure in your, you know, where you're living, what you're able to drive, your options that you have through to your savings and how you spend, that's not very important when you're like 21. Is it? You're not thinking about that.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's quite an old head on young shoulders to be prioritising a future.
Yeah.
When most people at that age are only thinking about a more hedonistic here and now.
Yeah, I think I was always like that. Maybe from more my mum as well. Like my mum always just sort of had like family allowance and a little cleaning job, and she bought all of our stuff out of that. And I always heard mum saying like, no, we can't have that. We've got to save for that. So maybe that's where I've got it from as well, whereas my dad wasn't really like that. It was always my mum that was like the one that was like really good with the money, and she'd make like 20 quid last all half term and things like that, you know, because we'd be like loads and loads of free activities, and at the end of the week we might have a McDonald's or something, you know.
Yeah.
So I think growing up like that, I think that maybe made me realise that when I got to my mum's sort of age, like in my 40s, I wanted to be secure and not worrying like mum was, because obviously when we were growing up, like mum didn't have money. I always thought, I don't want to be like that when I'm older. I remember sitting there when I was younger thinking, I want to be a millionaire. I want to buy a house. Like from a really, really young age, I remember that. Just really having the security. And it was never really about like handbags and things for me. It was about more seeing the world and security, like a house at home over my head, food on the table. I just wanted things like that and be able to like go out and do things like days out were important to me. Like if I wanted to go out and have a coffee, I could go out and have a coffee. It was never really about things. It was more security. And I'm exactly like that now. Like I like just going out with my kids for a walk. But then it's nice that if I want to buy my coffee, I can afford to do that. Whereas mum wouldn't have been able to do that. You know, it was always we had to take a flask. And most of my life has been like that, saving for now that, you know, I am mortgage free now. So I do have that flexibility. So making those choices, I'm pleased I did make them. And I'm not saying I'm right, but I don't really feel like I did miss out in my 20s because I'm not into alcohol, which is great because obviously that's really expensive. So when I went out, I would literally drive and have like a soda and lime because it was the cheapest. So I feel like I always went out, but like I swapped clothes with friends and like social media wasn't there when we were growing up, you know? Yeah. So I'd go out every week, and because I wasn't drinking, I'd go out for like, what, 80p and then come home. So people are like, do you feel like you missed out? I didn't have girls' holidays and things. But again, it wasn't really something I wanted to do. Like even now, like I'd say like go to for a spa day with you, or I'd go to London and have some cocktails, but I wouldn't want to go and get like completely drunk and in a club now. And I didn't want to do that at 17. So I think it's the way I am as well as a person.
Well, actually, something you've said there, it really sort of resonates with me in terms of how I think people are with money, because you were talking about how your association with it came from when you were little and you could see your mum and how she was approaching saving. And it sounds like your mum did an amazing job, by the way, of making that money last, and you not being aware of it in a negative, you're still doing loads of things.
No, we had a lovely time.
But that's incredible, isn't it, that she was like thinking, right, £20 half term, right, I'm still going to, you know, make sure we're having experiences and doing things. But I think, and I don't know how if you'll agree with me, but I think you have an emotional attachment to money. I don't think it's just, you know, maths and getting bills paid. I think it's emotional. And I think your emotional attachment to money and your association with love and probably other things like music. And I just think there's a few fundamentals that we get, we kind of have our map by the time we're about 10. Do you know what I mean? In terms of how you feel about it?
I think it's so emotional. And I think it, like I talk about in my book, money is a mindset. And I think it's the same with anything. Like you can say you want to do something, but until you act on that emotion, you're not going to do it. Do you get what I mean? Like you saying, I want to be a singer. I want to write a song. Okay, have you written a song? Well, no. It's like, I want to save for something. Okay, well, how are you going to do it? And that's what I talk about. It's like putting those plans in action. And you can fail at that. And that's fine. Like we had the conversation before this started. I wanted to do singing and dance when I was younger. And I tried and tried and tried and tried and got knocked not, that's not best. And I got a no and eventually walked away. But I still feel like I gave it my all and I tried there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say to anyone. Like, if you're in debt, even if you're just paying off £1 a week and you're trying your absolute best, then you're doing amazing. Don't put pressure on yourself. You're doing the best that you can possibly do. Mm. And I think that's the same with anything in life that you want to do. If you try and try and try and fail, then no one can ask any more of you, can they?
No, they can't. And sometimes as well, you have to kind of step back a little bit and try and go back to your initial examples of how money was spoken about in your house, how budgeting was spoken about. How do you feel about with kids, if you should be very open with them about earnings? I mean, is that something you do with your kids? Like if they said, how much is a job or how much was our house or something like that? I'm never quite sure the right way.
Interesting. I mean, Brody's 10 and my daughter's 4, so obviously Bronte doesn't ask for that. She just asks for everything when we go in the shop. I want that. Can I have that?
They turn into consumers so little.
Yeah. Can I have that? And then we'll get the screaming tantrum and I'm like, no, because... And my friend even said the other day, oh my God, you've said no and you've stuck to it. And I said, because even if I gave her that lollipop, 2 seconds later, she's going to want the dolly in the next shop. There's no switch off button. She's 4 years old. Yeah. Like, if you came around here now, straight away, she'd be talking to you. And if you bought a sweet, she'd be like, have you got any more? I mean, there's no filter at 4 years old, is there? So, at that age. But Brody, my 10-year-old, he does ask me the odd thing. Like, only recently, like, we're talking about that Prime drink, for example. He's like,
yes,
I want Prime. And I'm like, if you think I'm paying £20 for a bottle of Prime, he's like, but why? But why won't you? Because I'm like, it's value for money. I'm like, because they're like £2 or whatever and people are profiteering off of them. And I'm just like, out of principle, I'm like, no, you're not having it for £20. So he does ask me about things like that. And I have tried to talk to him about money. Like, there's a really good example I can give you, not really on house prices and things, but I will talk to him about them when he's older. But we went to the park when he was about 8. And I remember he said to me, can I have an ice cream? And I said, yeah, sure, no problem, ice cream. The next day he asked me for another one. And yes, I could afford to buy him another one. I'm not going to lie. Like my mum physically couldn't, I could, but I still want to teach him. So I went, no, you had one yesterday. And he went, oh, it's not a lot of money. And I went, sorry? He went, it's not a lot of money. It's only £2. That's what he said to me. And I went, how much is a lot of money then, Brody? He went, £10. That's what he thought was a lot of money. So I said, okay then. So if I buy you an ice cream every single day this week, Monday to Friday, Brody, that's £10. And he went, oh! And I went, that is why I can't buy you one every single solitary day. You can have one twice a week in school holidays. I was thinking, because I don't want you having one every single day. It's not good for you. And no, you're not having everything you want. And he accepted that because I explained it to him. And I thought, wow, that really worked. Like, I didn't need to say £1,000 is a lot of money. Like, if you said to an adult, what's a lot of money? They might go £20,000. But a 10-year-old perceptive on that was £10 is loads of money. And it is a lot of money still, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's still money. So I tried to sort of do that with him. And I kind of do that now. Like, even if he does want something really expensive, like he wanted some Nike Air Max, you know, he's getting to 10 and he said, oh, I really want Nike Air Max. So I said to him, okay, you can have them, but you can have them towards your, like, you can have them as part of your Christmas present, because the particular trainers he wanted were like £90, and I would usually spend like maybe £40, £30 on a pair of trainers for them
every
day.
They're really expensive.
They're so expensive. Yeah. So I said, do you really want that for your Christmas present? And he said, yes, I really, really want that. So I thought, okay, you can have that. So I'm trying to sort of educate him that, yeah, like, things like that aren't everyday things. You can't have Nike Air Maxes all the time. And I don't really feel, if I was worth £1 billion or £1, that I feel like I want to teach him how much things cost, because when he's older, he can't go to his boss at the end of the month and be like, oh, listen, mate, you know, I've spent all my money, got a week to go, can I have another couple of £100? Like you see children do. And it's like the boss would be like, absolutely not. So I want him to be able to know about money and manage money. Of course, you know, if I can, I'll never let my kids struggle, and I'd love to help them when they're older. And part of me as a mum wants to buy them everything, wants to get him all the different colours Air Max. Of course I do. I love him. He's my baby. But I just think, well, no, because I'm probably going to turn him into a person maybe I don't love. I want him to be grounded, and I want him to be thankful and excited. And if you brought him something now, he's 10 years old, honestly, Sophie, he would be so excited. He'd be like, oh my God, mummy's mate come round and bought her this, you know. And that's what I love about him, you know, because he's so grateful, and I want to keep my kids grounded. I think it's really important.
It is important. And I think you have to, again, play a long game with that, don't you?
Yeah.
And sometimes with the kids, I've had exactly the same thing where I say, if I do that for you, it'll make you happier in the here and now, but in the long term, I'll be doing you a disservice.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really tough that, though, because you are, you know, the bank of the parents, and they don't really have any idea of really what it means or what you've had to do to earn that money. And also, once you cross over into well, yes, I could afford it, but there'll be a repercussion later on down the line. That's quite tricky as well.
Yeah, definitely, because I think Brody will say things like, well, you can afford it because you've got a nice car and things like that. And I'm like, it's irrelevant, Brody. What I can afford and what you can have is totally irrelevant. So, you know, one time he came home, the only thing he's ever asked me for, really obscure, he saw this young guy walking down the road with like a Gucci bum bag. You know, like they wear them over the shoulder. And he went to me, can I have a Gucci bag? And I was like, I'm sorry, you're 10 years old. I think he was about 9 at the time. I was like, absolutely not. He's like, you've got one. And I was like, yeah, I didn't have one till I was about 38 and I paid for it myself and I'm not buying you a Gucci bag. And I remember he was like, oh, so unfair, you know, you get that. And I thought, oh my God, he's turned into a teenager. And I remember thinking back when I was a kid saying to my mum, can I have these LA Gear trainers? And she was like, absolutely not. You can have the Woolworths ones. I can't afford them. They're exactly the same. And I'm like, they're not exactly the same, mum. I'm getting picked on in school. This is my life's hell. And my mum always says to me, if I could have afforded to get you one pair, I would. And I think it's that line, isn't it? Like, I want him to have like the odd nice thing so he feels happy. Because I remember those, I remember thinking, I'm never going to let my kid have bad trainers. But yeah, my mum's so mean, making me have Woolworths trainers. She's ruining my life. So that's probably why at Christmas I was like, yeah, you can have them. I so get your point. So it is really difficult because you do want to like get things for them because you love them, but it's because you love them you have to sometimes say no too, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got to be always picking the boundaries. And on that note, I was thinking, because obviously there's not just you in this equation, you have your husband. So do you see, you know, you don't always have the same opinion on things, do you? I know that Richard and I have done that where we feel differently about things. And he'll say, no, don't just buy that for them. They have that's more of a birthday present or a Christmas present type thing. So I guess you've got to kind of feel similarly about these things too.
Yeah, and I think having a discussion with your partner about money is really important. Like so many women I speak to now say to me, oh, I don't know how much our bills are. I don't know what bank we're with. I don't know where the gas and electric comes from. I don't know this. I don't know that. So I think just having open and honest conversations with your partner is really important. And it's, yes, it's fine that one of you manages it. Like Adam actually does manage our gas and electric and things, but I know where it is to go to it for spreadsheet because I'm working. So that works for us in our house. But so it's fine if someone completely runs the show on that. But I think it's important. And it's the same with the children. So like, yeah, we'll have differences of agreements. And I've been in the wrong, you know, I hold my hands up and sometimes I say things in front of the kids. And he's really logical. I mean, you've just met him. You can see how logical he is compared to me. He will say to me, wait till the kids are in bed and then we'll discuss that. And he's right. And over the years, now Brody's got older, I've definitely done that. Because I think you forget when they're little, you can have the conversation. But Brody's now at that age where he's like, oh, Dad said you were wrong on that. Or Mum said, and then they throw it back on you. And he's definitely at that age where he'll go and ask Adam, like, can I have Prime, Dad? And Adam will be like, no. And then he'll come and ask me. And I said to him, if you do really well on his maths at school, he can get Prime. And I managed to find it for £10, which is still an absolute rip-off. And I've been totally conned. But it was something he really wanted. And he'd done really, really well on his maths. And Adam even said to me, I still don't think you should have bought him it because it's a waste of money. But so we disagreed on that. But Adam was like, okay, I understand why you're doing it. So it is difficult, isn't it? I just think relationships, whether it's with your children. And I don't think there's any right or wrong. Like what I'm doing is not right or wrong. Because it could be completely wrong for you. Like, you might go, well, no, actually, we've bought our children crates of Prime because we want to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it doesn't mean that I'm wrong and you're right, or you're right and I'm wrong. It's just knowing, I think it's important you and your partner are on the same page with things more than anything.
Definitely. And I love the fact that we're bringing it to such a thing like Prime. It just shows you that we're both in it, the same. We've got the same age.
We're both in this together, Sophie.
So for anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, how would you describe it? Prime is, it's a drink. It's like, I think they call it hydration aid, which is also what a drink is.
Just
so
water really with some juice in it.
And it's promoted by a YouTuber that lots of the kids watch. And then they do it in these very select drops to supermarkets.
Yeah.
And then you can never get hold of it. So then it goes on things like eBay and places like that where people hoik the prices.
It's like a $2.99 drink or something. And then people go, oh, it's in the newsagents for £20. It's profiteering.
Exactly.
But I have just thought of a great money tip, Sophie. We could do a drink and all the kids could go mad over it.
We could, couldn't we?
Yeah, there you go.
Or we could do a sort of knockoff, like we call it like Prome or Prame or something.
And our kids can promote it for us. Guess what our mums are doing? We'd be the coolest mums in the world then. They're like, oh my God, our mums are so cool.
I think it might be inherently flawed because it's us doing it.
Yeah, we're not KSI, are we? We'd be so boring.
You're not. But what you were talking about when you're saying about talking to your other half, you know, if you're, you know, co-parenting your kids and you have that conversation about money. But I also think that brings me to just talking about money in general. It's very strange. I was listening to something where you were being interviewed and you were saying how when we talk to people, we ask all sorts of personal questions and yet money is a complete taboo. And it's so true. I don't think I've ever had conversations with even my closest girlfriends where it comes down to what they earn or what I earn or any of that stuff.
Mm.
It's just not something there's much transparency over. But it could be so helpful and good for people if there's a bit more transparency, I think.
Yeah, I think we're told not to ask. And I've always sort of been quite open and honest. Like, I'll say, like, oh, you know, what you're doing and what you're earning and things like that with, like, close friends. I'm not saying you should tell the world, do you see what I mean? But, yeah, like, it is true. Like, it's the one thing that it's imprinted in us. It's rude to ask that. So, therefore, we don't ask it. Like, you wouldn't walk in my kitchen now and then me say to you, oh, how much did you earn last year? You'd straight away close up and be like, I don't like her. What's she doing?
Yeah.
Why is she asking me that? And because of that side of it, I feel like it makes people so frightened to say whether they haven't got any money and not know what to do and who to speak to if they get in debt. Like, they can't even confide in their friends and tell them they're in debt. Mm. Or there might be like a group WhatsApp chat and you could be in that, for example, and you're a successful lady, right? And there could be 10 other people in that chat. It could just be a friend of a friend that's organising a night out. There could be somebody in that chat that is really struggling at the minute, but she thinks, oh my God, I know Sophie Lispex is in the chat. I know that girl down the road is in the chat and she's got to be like, I'm embarrassed to say I can't do this. Whereas you guys would all be fine about it. You know, everyone always is. They're like, oh, that's absolutely fine. Don't worry. Like, come and we'll get you a drink, most people would say. Or, yeah, don't worry about that. But we're told to not talk about it to such a degree that I feel it's almost damaging that we now don't talk about it to so much. That's the one thing I feel COVID and the cost of living has done. People are being more open. Like, actually, it's just important to go for a coffee, or actually, I'm really struggling at the minute. You're going to have to put a jumper on when you come round because I can't afford the heating. Yeah. I think if there is a positive to come out of it, at least we are sort of all talking and all communicating and a lot of people are in the same boat and feeling less worried to sort of say, even to say to their wealthier friends who maybe are not in that boat, because their wealthier friends understand, because it's all over the media and the news, everything you put on, everyone understands that there's a cost of living crisis at the minute. But there's probably always, well, there has always been people in a cost of living crisis, but because it's not been, I mean, the cost of living crisis at the minute is obviously huge, as in like petrol and mortgages and everything gone up, but there's always been people that have been really, really struggling. But because it's not been sort of spoken about like it is now, I feel people have been worried to say
definitely
that they're in debt, and maybe that's caused them more pain and more anguish over that. You know, there's reports that people take their own lives over money, which is absolutely heartbreaking because it is just money. And things like that absolutely make me feel sick when I hear that.
Well, there's a lot of shame associated with getting yourself in a real state, isn't there? And as you say, being unsure of how to reach out. I imagine it, if you get to that extreme situation, it's very isolating. Mm. And you know, the very sort of fundamental thing of, you say, being able to even afford to just go and meet a friend to have a drink where you might possibly confess about those things. That all these things close up. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay inside your own head, stay inside your own space.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes get people coming to you now that you've become a public figure with talking to people about money saving? Do you have people come every to you day, if somebody's got in this situation?
Yeah, pretty much every day. There's people in my inbox that say, I'm really struggling, but I also get a lot of messages saying I was really struggling and you shared a reel about talking about it, and I've spoken to my friend or I've thank you for putting the links up about the National Help Line and Step Change and things like that, and I've gone and spoken to them and I've got a plan in place and I'm going to be debt free in 2 years. And I had a lovely message the other day, a lady, she was 10 grand's worth in debt, and she said, oh, I've been following your little savings guide and I've been doing it, you put it up about a year and a half ago and I'm now only 8 grand in debt. And I was like, that is absolutely amazing. She goes, I feel so buzzing, I'm still in debt but I feel I've achieved so much. I was like, you have, that's a huge amount of money to have paid off, like, well done, like, on everything else, like, that's absolutely amazing. And I just think that's like the positive side we should be, because we're all going to earn different money, we're all going to be all different walks of life, there's always someone richer, there's always someone worse off. I always say that to everyone, so try and not worry about what everybody else is doing, because you're never going to keep up. We're all in different situations, aren't we?
Yeah.
So I just think, I think it's trying to get the confidence to just, especially say to your nearest and dearest, you know what, I can't afford to do that, I'm really sorry. And I do think that's starting to change, especially this year, which is the positive to take out of it. That we're all talking, you know?
No, I totally agree with you. And I think from people I've spoken to who've got themselves in a really very intense situation, once they started speaking to people, everybody just swoops in and says, oh my God, why didn't you tell us sooner? And from that moment on, you've shared it and it starts to alleviate and you start to make a plan about getting yourself back into a good spot. So you're right about talking to people. So if we talk more about you, what was going on in your life when you had your first baby, when you had your son? What were you up to at that time?
So when I got pregnant with Brody, I was working in mortgage collections arrears for a bank. Doing that, it was on a call centre. Very interesting job. Again, to do with money, I guess. People every day struggling. So it was mortgage arrears. So I was doing that. And then I got made redundant for the bank when I was pregnant. So obviously, really, really worried. And then my partner, actually, Adam, lost his job at the time as well. So yes, there was two of us out of work. I was pregnant, so it was a really worrying time, as you can imagine, for both of us to be out of work. Adam then sort of got another job. It didn't kind of work out. And then so what I did was, with my redundancy money, which wasn't huge at all, it was a few thousand pounds, it wasn't enough to like last for a long time at all. So I'd only been at the bank, I think, a year and a half, 2 years maybe. Mm-hmm. And I was like the bottom grade, you know, like when you first go into the bank. So I wasn't on a higher pay grade, so it made it very difficult. And one of my friends at the bank had been made redundant as well. And we set up an online business and we sort of sold underwear from home on Amazon and eBay. And I did that for about 8 to 10 years. I never earned loads of money off of it, but we just kept afloat from it.
Yeah.
And then sort of from then had Bronte whilst we were doing this, and Adam sort of used to pack all the stuff as well. And we didn't have much at all. We didn't have our mortgage because I bought properties when I was younger and I cleared that, but we still had all our bills to pay. But I wasn't earning much more than sort of between 15 and 20,000. I think Adam was earning about 8,000. So it was literally, yeah, it was just covering the bills, and it was packed lunches everywhere. And
yeah.
But we still had like a nice time, but it was like living like mum was. And it was like that really pretty much the whole of our time we've been together, sort of always sort of having to say no, and on the group WhatsApp chats going, I can't afford to do that, or I have to go where there's a voucher code, or I've only got a tenner tonight. And it was just like that for years. You know, we'd always wanted to move, but we couldn't. We had years and years and years of that. And it was always when Brody was little, we just sort of went out to, like, I did lots of church groups and things like that because they were, like, just pay a donation. And I talk about that a lot. Like, I didn't do, like, the classes where you had to pay an upfront thing of, like, £150, £200. I just didn't have it, you know.
Yeah, so much of that's actually really expensive.
It is
well,
really expensive.
It?
It's lovely if you can do it. And, my God, if I could turn back the time and do them all, I'd 100% do them all. If you can afford to do them, of course you're going to do that. It's a lovely thing to do. But at the same time, I also had a great time at the church groups, and, like, there was messy play and there was, like, little council-run groups. And I just sort of did all them and then did, like, NCT and did a thing where we all sort of went to each other's houses once a week for a coffee. So it was just like hosting, like you'd buy the cake and the coffee 1 week and then they would. So, and I did like lots of long walks and things like that. And that was sort of all I sort of did with the kids when they were young, really. There wasn't anything particularly lavish that we did.
But still, when you said about being pregnant and then both of you losing your jobs, my jaw did drop a bit. That sounds incredibly stressful. Is that the first time you've been in a situation where the rug's been pulled out from you like that?
No, because before I had my son, my first husband left me. And so obviously I lost my home. I wasn't really working. I got a job for £7,000 a year. I was trying to sell the home. I was heartbroken. Felt like I lost everything around me. He had the car in the divorce settlement and I had properties, but they were it was in 2007 when it was the property crash. They were all in negative equity. So I think it was horrific. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to get out of this mess. Like, ever. And I had lots of friends around me, but I was in such a bad, dark place, like unbelievable. So when that happened, because I think, and this is going to sound really cringe, but I'm so in love with Adam and so happy with him. I know it sounds really like, oh my God, so cringe. But I actually am, like, he's like my best friend, that I remember thinking, well, we've got each other, like, it'll be all right. Like, so maybe because I'd had that happen and my parents had broken up just before that, like so much bad had happened that I've not even sort of spoken about my Instagram, that I wouldn't speak about in my private life, that when that happened, although it was horrific, I just did think, well, at least I'm having a baby, you know, I really want a baby and I've got Adam, and I was trying to sort of see the positive side of it. Obviously, I was thinking, oh my goodness me, but I think as well, where I have been good with my money, I had had some savings and Adam had savings, so we knew that we'd be all right just to cover the bills and we was just going to get by, really. And neither of us are into, like, mate, like, it wasn't like, oh God, we're not going to be able to go up West End every week, because we weren't really like that. Like, yeah, if we've got it, lovely, we go out and enjoy ourselves, but if we haven't, we're fine not to as well at the same time.
Yeah, and I think... Well, firstly, I don't think it's cringy at all that you're happily married. I think that's really lovely. It's really nice to hear. And also, I think I've noticed that so many people who give advice in an area have really experienced, you know, the complete extremes of what it is they're giving advice on. So the fact that you've had that and you've lived that experience of having it all fall away and just feeling like you're in a really dark place and everything has just gone completely tilted, you know, sometimes life just happens to us for all our planning, for all our thought about it. And you can't control what happens with other variables, like what other people do with their, make decisions with, you know, what they're doing. So we no one's immune from those things at all. And it probably stands you in really good stead for the people that come to you and want to hear from you about how you've got yourself into a much happier spot now.
Yeah, definitely.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, did you always want to be a mum? Is that something you always thought?
No, not in my 20s. I was like, oh, I'm never going to have kids.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I don't want kids. Like, oh, they're so annoying. Like, no way. I don't want to get pregnant. And the thought of giving birth, like, who would do that? You must be mental. And then literally my first husband left me and I was 29 and I was like, I want to get married, no kids. Like, that is when it hit me. And maybe that is because he left that I then thought it's been taken away from me. And at 29, when you're approaching 30, you're not, because now I'm 41 now. I thought I was so old. I thought everyone's taken, everyone's got kids, everyone's got their career sorted out. I've literally not got my career sorted out. I've got properties that are negative equity. I'm absolutely screwed, you know. I've got nothing. And then I think meeting Adam, I knew the minute I met him I wanted to marry him and have his babies. Like, it was just instant. Like, I think I must have told him probably on the second day, which is probably why he did dump me after 2 weeks of meeting me. But that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
Slightly stalked him. Don't know whether I'd recommend that, but, you know, got him in the end. Told you I'd go get it, literally. So, yeah, it was, I didn't want him, No, not at all. And then I was so broody, it was unbelievable. It just hit me. So I feel like that can happen, can't it? Because I suppose lots of women like that. They're like, don't want them, don't want them, don't want them. Like they get like 36 or something. They're like, I want a baby. It's really weird, isn't it? But I think definitely. It was right for me. Some people want babies like at 18, 19. They just know, don't they?
Yeah.
And they want to be a young mum and that really suits them. And that's wonderful because, as you say, you've got like a 19-year-old as well. So that's lovely because you're a really young mum for him. But it just wasn't right for me. Like I would have been awful as a young mum.
And so when you had your baby, can you remember how it felt to suddenly be a mum and have that happen?
Yeah, I was obsessed with him. Like, obsessed to the point of I'd be one of them people that say, like, you come over, I'd be like, oh, my God, look, he's lifting his fork. He's kicking his ball. And people would be like, yeah, and I'd be like, he's so handsome, isn't he? Isn't he amazing? Oh, my God, isn't he, like, the cutest baby you've ever seen in your entire life? Have you seen this outfit I bought for him? Like, yeah, I was obsessed with him. And I still am now, I'm not going to lie. I am absolutely obsessed with my kids. Like, I just love them so much. That's why I struggle with the no, you can't have, because I'm like, oh, my God, they're so cute, though. I'm a bit soft in other ways. I was just obsessed with him. Like, I don't know, like... Yeah, the minute he was born, I was just, the love you feel for him is just, and I always felt like I'm never going to breastfeed when in my 20s. I was like, yuck, I'm never going to do that. It's disgusting. Why would any mother do that? The minute I had him, I was like, I want to breastfeed. Like, and I think my mum was even like, oh my God, like she wants to breastfeed. She wants another baby. I was like, oh my God, I think I want four. But also I hated the pregnancy. I didn't have a good pregnancy and the birth was horrific. So that side, I generally didn't like. I was right in my 20s on that side. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just being a mum, I loved it. Yeah, I really did.
And you always thought you wanted to have more because your daughter now, she's the same age as my youngest. Yeah. So she's really cute.
Yeah. I always did want more, but I had a lot of trouble having Bronte. There's a big age gap between them because I just didn't fall pregnant with Bronte. So I could just call her my little miracle. We were sort of giving up hope and then I got pregnant with her. So it was amazing. She's hard work, but she's so cute, but she's hard work. She's four. I mean, you know, having five kids, like.
Well, it's funny because this morning when Mickey, my four-year-old, was ordering me around and I was like, I think I've birthed my own boss.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've done.
You've given birth to yourself. That's what my mum says.
I've just had this boss child.
Yeah.
I just basically exist to fulfil his needs. Yeah, that's the kind of it.
They tell you what to do. And the little things they say when they're four are so funny. Like she went to me the other day, I'm not wearing that. And I'm just like, you are, because you're 4 years old and that's what you're wearing. And then she come out in like a tutu and we were going to the park. I was like, no, Bronte, you're not wearing that. Like, so yeah, I love their little characters. I think that's a really nice age, like four and five.
It is. It's really funny. Yeah. I definitely like it too. So with your, so when you got to 2019 is when you set up your Instagram, is that right?
I set it up in 2019. I decided, I think, oh, I might start a page. And then I really went for it. I'd say like January 2020 was when I really sort of started going for it.
And how natural was it for you to sort of put yourself out there in that way? Because I've heard you talk about anxiety as part of you know, something you deal with.
Mm.
So sometimes that seems slightly counterintuitive to also put yourself out there like that. But obviously I think it's brilliant to take on challenges. I mean, has it helped in some ways with that, do you think?
No, I'd say I'm probably worse. I mean, I'm really honest. I suffer extreme anxiety and depression. I'm not going to lie. I have trouble getting out of bed some days. But I always try and put one foot forward in front of the other. When I have a low day, I've been on Instagram and said it and broke down and cried. You know, I feel like I'm just a normal person like on there, and I like to show that side. And I like talking about mental health and anxiety because it's passionate to me because I suffer with it every single day. I battle it. But it's weird. I've not got anxiety speaking to somebody. Like when you came around, like I'm not nervous to meet people. In fact, I love it. I was like, oh, buzzing. Because it makes me want to get up. Like if you'd not been here this morning, I'd have felt depressed maybe and just overthinking. Whereas Adam straight away said to me, look, Sophie's going to come around. Like you're going to have a chat with her. Like, and he's like really positive. He's my positive little egg. Because I felt really depressed when I woke up this morning. I'm not going to lie. But then I felt doing something positive like this, speaking, it does help me. And like going for walks really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
So yes and no, because obviously there's bad sides to social media. There's people that can be mean and can be horrible. So instantly I've not read or looked at anything I ever do. Like I don't watch myself back on any TV show. I don't really ever listen to a podcast back. My DMs are usually really lovely, so I'm okay with it. But I don't go searching for anything because otherwise I wouldn't be able to cope. Like, that's how I've had to do it. So
yeah.
I've gone on it, I put something on, And I couldn't cope with looking and seeing things, because it's all very well, we all get spoken about, like, you could walk out the room now and I could be like, I don't like a cardigan she had on, but the beauty you've got of that, I do, by the way. I was just looking at a cardigan.
I was like, whoa, she went straight for a cardigan.
Straight. It's just a pink cardigan. There's nothing wrong with it. You could walk out the room and I could say that. But the beauty of it is you don't know I've said it. Do you get what I mean? Whereas when it's in black and white and you know yourself... Yeah. What is any good of me coming over to you saying, oh my God, have you seen that comment about you in the Daily Mail, Sophie? They're saying that you look horrible. There's nothing good to come of that. So
nothing. That
side of it, I've just never, ever look at. So I live in bliss doing that. That's the only thing that I would say is don't look. If you want to do the page, just don't look at anything. And then the other side of it, I feel in some ways it does help my anxiety, because I get to talk on there and perform. So I'm not anxious with doing that, because that is that side of me. Like, I'm confident to talk to people. Mm. It doesn't mean I've not got anxiety. I mean, like, I'm so confident.
Is that
walk
something
in a room.
You've had your whole life, the anxiety, do you think?
I think it's got worse and worse and worse as the years have gone on. And I think it's probably some of the worst anxiety I've had is this month I've ever had in my life. Other than going through my divorce, I've just had a terrible month with it, like horrific, overthinking everything, second guessing everything. I think as well, I wear my heart on my sleeve, I'm really open. So then I go back and think, oh, what did I say? Oh, are they going to like me? Or oh, what did I do wrong? Da, da, da. And I tried, as older I've got, and I'd got really, really good with that. I felt like I'd managed it. And then this month, I'm not going to lie, I've gone back to doing it again. Mm. So I need to try and get on top of that, definitely. But social media is good for me, as in, like, it gives me something to focus on and it gives me a career and a career
purpose.
I enjoy and
purpose
a purpose, yeah. And I've met loads of lovely people. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here today with you without it. Do you, I mean, I've met so many interesting people and people that are now my friends that I've met through it, that I've stayed in touch with afterwards. Because if I get on with someone, I think, oh, I got on with them. Like, it doesn't matter if I met them on a podcast, TV show, they're a singer, they're a dancer, they're the man that works down the road, he's been in debt. I've met so many different friends from doing it, all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And that side of it I've loved, because I've opened my circle and I can natter to all different people and I enjoy that, because I can go meet up with different people and stuff, and that's good for me.
I can see you get good energy from being around other people and those one-to-one conversations. And I also thank you so much for being open with how you're feeling, because firstly, I'm sorry you've been struggling more than normal recently. That must be really tough. I've got family members who struggle with anxiety, so I've seen firsthand how it's not the same as stress or anything like that. It's like a really fizzy, uncomfortable thing that can take over everything.
It's painful. It hurts your body is the best way to describe it. And your bones are...
Yeah.
I can't describe... It's weird, like, when people say describe it, I'm like, when I'm in my bed, but there are loads of people don't know what I'm talking about with this. Like, when I wake up in the morning, I'm inside my bed. I feel like I'm in the mattress. Mm. Like, I can't get up.
Yeah.
Because if I go back to sleep, it turns off my mind. So when people say, do you trouble sleeping? I'm like, no, I'm the total opposite. I can't wake up.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm stressed, I go to sleep. Mm-hmm. That's the way I deal with things. Because
just to
I feel
shut down.
Like, I think because my mind is so overactive, like, I'm always on to the next thing. Maybe that's why I'm good with saving, because I'm a worrier. It's something I can control, isn't it? So
yes.
Maybe that's why I'm good with it.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose with numbers in general, if there's a predictable outcome to it, then there's actually a kind of music in it too, you know? Like, sums make sense and they're kind of, there's like an equation that's pleasing. Mm. And if you're someone that derives pleasure from that, I can imagine it's... must be quite addictive, actually.
Because I don't not like knowing the answer. I want either a yes or a no. So, for example, say I'd asked you to come on your podcast and you were like, I'll get back to you, that would drive me insane. I'd be like, what do you mean, get back to me? Is it a yes or a no? Like, I think because I know the answer straight away. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's going through a divorce when he was like, I don't know what I want. And that went on for 4 months. And I didn't eat for nearly 4 months. And I think that not knowing, that has driven me so bad later in life that now I can't cope with that. Like, I'd rather you, someone just say, no, you've not got it. And then I can deal with it. It's really strange. Once I know the answer, so maybe that's the thing with, like, money and control. Like, I'm like, no, I have to get to this thing and I won't stop till I do, or whatever it is. And maybe that's why I've been successful on social media, because I'm like, no, I have to get to this number. No, I need to grow. I need to make sure I'm doing this right. I need to make sure I've got this many reels going on a week. I need to make sure I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a control thing as well.
So it feels quite pleasing for your brain to have that sense of that. And I totally understand that. And I think also, when you're describing someone needing 4 months to decide what they were doing next, when you're emotionally invested, there's a huge cruelty in that for you to have to just be waiting to see what
horrific.
The outcome.
I mean, absolutely horrific. You better decide someone.
Even if someone did that for 4 hours, that'd be a long 4 hours, let alone weeks, months, you know, that's...
And I think that's definitely stayed with me in my life.
Yeah, that's always traumatic.
Gonna,
that's deeply traumatic. And another thing that can be traumatic is what I've heard you say about your dyslexia. I've got a dyslexic son and I can see how difficult sort of conventional education is when you don't always feel like you know what's going on in a classroom. How did you feel when you were little with that?
My mum harped on about it all the time. My mum always said when I was younger, like, she's got, I've never been diagnosed with ADHD, but those people always say it's really obvious I've got it. My mum used to say she's dyslexic, she's got ADHD, she's, you know, she needs help, she writes everything back to front. But I think, you know yourself, years ago, it was just like, they didn't ever really look into things like that. Mm. So it was just like, I was just kind of just left. And they would just like, be like, oh, you've spelled everything wrong. You've put all your letters back to front. Like, everything's mirrored. And I'm like, oh, I don't understand. And like, even like your name, for example, that's a really hard name for me.
That is a ridiculous name. It's hard. No, I get it misspelled anyway.
Not even the Ellis Bextor bit so much.
Oh, really? Oh, having
it's
the
Sophie.
PH. Yeah.
I find that a really hard name to spell. I have to like keep putting it in my phone. Like if I was writing it, I'm like, so, I can't even think I'd spell it now. I don't know whether it's SP or SH. And I know it's got an O in it. And I know
no,
it's
that
got
makes
H,
sense.
And I know it's got an I. And I know
it's. You'd have a so sound as well.
Yeah, and I know it's got an I and I know it's got an E, but I don't know which order it goes in. And when I see it, it's really, really weird. When I see the way your name is spelt, it looks wrong to me.
Well, like Soppy or something.
Yeah, look, that's what it looks like. Yes. But I spell it Soppy. But I, in my mind,
you
that
can call
looks
me
like
Soppy. That's what I mind.
In my mind, it looks like Sophie. But when I see it written down the right way,
you think, oh, I've done it wrong.
I would almost argue with you and be like, "You've spelt that wrong." And you're like, "No, I haven't, Gemma. That's my name." And I'm like, "Are you sure you spelled that right?" And George is another name that I can't spell that. My friend's got a little boy called George, and I'm always like, "Oh gosh, this is birthday." So I say it into my phone. I go, George, like that, you know, you can't even Google. Sophie, like, that's there's certain names that I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, I panic on a card. I'm like, oh, I know those letters are here. Hopefully this is right.
But how good isn't it that we, with, you know, so much digital technology, it does alleviate so many of these pressures when you're able to use your phone in a different way so you can get your thoughts across, you can get your ideas across. And the fact that spelling and long-form reading is tricky is just...
It's
taken
amazing.
Away. I love that very much. I think it's brilliant.
It's hard when you read things back because I wrote something on social media the other day and luckily people obviously that follow me know about it and they were all chuckling because I was trying to put out a positive message and I said something like, doing this will make you feel better. Whatever it was, I put will not make you feel better. Like I did the other meaning. So basically the meme was like all positive and my caption was like completely negative. And I'd left it for, I think, 24 hours. And everyone was like putting laughter under the thing. And I was thinking, what's so funny about this meme? Like, it's not funny. This is a serious subject I'm talking about. And that was getting me stressed. And then I went in my inbox and people are like, oh, Gem, you have made us laugh. Like, you've put the... And I'm like, right, okay, I better go and edit that. So, yeah, sometimes it's a little bit hard because I read things back. People are like, just read it back. And I'm like, I did. And then my friends are like, okay, right. That's really bad then. So, yeah, it is hard. But you know what? Everyone's like, get someone to write your captions. But I'm like, no, I want to be me. And you've got, I always say to everyone, you've got to Geminize it. Like, understand what I'm saying. You'll get there in the end.
Yeah, and also I think people are much, much, much more au fait with, you know, people, the meaning of something coming across more than the literal. Because we're all writing and doing our captions. Like, I mean, if you're someone that struggles with punctuation, grammar, spelling, like, stay away from the internet because it's just like,
completely.
I'm
doing this job. And commas and full stops. Well, I know where a full stop kind of comes in, but I throw commas in now because I'm trying to get a bit better, but I don't actually know if I'm putting it in the right place. Because my mum said, no, Jen, when you're like saying something and then you stop there and that's where it needs a comma. So I'm trying to learn. I feel like I've got a bit better, actually. I probably haven't. Everyone's probably listening to this being like, no, Jen, you're dreadful at it. But, you know, I'm trying.
Your mum sounds really cool, by the way. You've mentioned her a few times. She sounds like someone who's always been a
I'm really close to her, yeah.
Does she live near you?
She lives in Hertfordshire and I'm in Essex, so it's about 45 minutes away driving, but mum doesn't drive.
Okay, so you can see her.
She never learnt to drive because she couldn't afford it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They couldn't afford driving lessons and she's like, oh, well, I couldn't have afforded a car. And now I've even sort of said to her, well, listen, learn to drive and I'll buy you a car. And she's like, absolutely not. The cost of petrol, Gemma, I'm not doing that. That's how my mum is. She's like, no. Like, so I'm like, okay.
Starting to see where the money management started from.
Yeah, she's really like that. Like, even Lyft now, I'll be like, oh, mum, just do that and I'll give you that. No, it's £5. You will absolutely not. She's like that now. And I'm like, no, mum, let me help you. But she's always going to be independent. She's never going to be. Like, people are like, why don't you let your mum come and take her? I'm like, do you know my mum? She's not going to be taking that, you know? Like, so, yeah, that's just mum. But
yeah, but that's cool, though. She's obviously instilled that in you to be able to be very upfront with like, nope, this is going to cost that, so I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, I was hearing you talk about teaching money management in schools. Is there much of a momentum behind that? Because I think you were talking about possibly even doing it as a TV program or something like that. I just think it would be so brilliant. I'm all for it.
If you know anyone that can get me on a show to do it itself, let me know.
But wouldn't it be so good? Why did they not teach it in schools?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Isn't it?
Like they need to be teaching it in schools. I say it on every single podcast. I've said it on my Instagram. I tried to open a petition and it got shut down because one was open years ago or something. And I was like,
what?
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh
my gosh. I can't even get it in there. So I need to try and... I've got my PR sort of looking at it and I've got another meeting with them about trying to get it into schools. And I said, if we could do like a documentary on it where we went in and we spoke to some children and what they wanted to learn, then maybe we could cause some noise and some movement on it. But it's just me, and I speak to so many mums, and I know every single person would sign that petition. I reckon we could get, and I know there's so many celebrities and big accounts out there that I know that I could send it, that are mums. Like, I know if I sent it to you, you'd be like, absolutely, I'll share that on my stories. 100%. That would, we would all between us get the things. So I am looking at it because I just think, I don't think it needs to be an exam, because I think that's what the person went down before. It doesn't need to be an exam. It just, I feel it needs to be once a month, from sort of maybe year 9 to when they leave school, once a month, an open forum where the teachers just say, okay, today we're going to talk about a mortgage, what you have to do when you get a mortgage.
Yes.
And when you get a mortgage for £200,000, you're going to be paying back £350,000 because there's a thing called interest, for example. Do you know what I mean? I'm making these numbers up.
Yeah, agree.
I remember having a conversation with a few teenagers and they were like, what do you mean? If I borrow £200,000, I've got to pay back more than that, but I've only borrowed £200. And I'm like, yeah, because it's interest. So if you overpaid by like £30 a month, if you've got that extra money, you might bring 6 months off your mortgage and that might save you like £10,000 over like the 25-year term. We need to be showing things like that, like what to do with your first wage packet. When you are 17 and you're living at home with mum and dad, for example, or 18, and you might be paying mum and dad, say, £100 a week housekeeping, for example, you might be bringing home £1,500 a month. You are so rich then, you don't realise it. We need to be teaching in schools. With that £1,500, you've got £600 a month left. You've got £600 for yourself, put £600 away. If they put £600 away every single month, and they did that for 4 years, they'd almost have a deposit for their first home from 17 to 22 to 23. This is not being taught. If this was taught, because this is what my mum told me to do, and I told my sister to do it, and I saved up £25,000 and my sister saved up £30,000. I did it with my partner at the time, but he wasn't on high money at the time. If this was taught in schools, it would eradicate a lot on what to do when you're in debt. Where do you go? Is it anything to be ashamed of? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, all these things, and teenagers and young kids could ask questions that maybe they don't want to ask mum.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how much is it for your first house? Like, and it can be done by area, because every year it's ridiculous saying to a child up north what it is in London. So each classroom needs to be tailor-made for that child. So, okay, well, if you live around here, you're going to be paying £200,000 for a house. But if you move to London, you're going to be paying £2 million for a flat. So you have to decide where you want to live. So even if you're going to rent in London, you'd need to be on more money. And if you go into London, you'll get a thing called London Waiting. And just little things that we need to know. Like,
I totally agree with you.
Every single day. Like, we teach religious education, and I think that is important. Do not get me wrong. But why can't we remove something like that once a month and teach them about money? Because not everyone's going to be interested in religion, but everybody, whatever religion you are, whatever you believe in, money, we're all related to money.
Yeah.
Me, you, everybody in this room is related to money. We've all got that connected to us. Whether you're a multimillionaire or you are thousands of pounds worth in debt, we've all got money connected to us. So we need to be taught it. It's absolutely mental.
If it's even more basic, even if they just had it where there was, you know, an organisation that went round schools and did a week in, I think you could even start in primary with basic budgeting, you know, what it's going to feel like when you're growing. In secondary, teaching the difference between, you know, different types of employment, what's expected of, you know, how you taxes, all this kind of thing. Oh my goodness. And I do wonder sometimes if there's, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist in any way, but I do wonder if there's some sort of, I don't know, convenience and a lot of people not really having a good handle on how these things work.
Yeah, or do they want us to get in debt? Do they want the interest? Is there someone?
Exactly.
I do think that, like, how is it not being taught? Like,
I know.
It's absolutely... Yeah, and you could do it easy with primary school things. You know, there's like tuck shops and whatever they call them nowadays. Yeah. Probably not a tuck shop, is it? Probably old school. But, you know, like, maybe you could even do a thing like this week and say to all the parents, like, we want you to give your kids £2, £5, £10, whatever the school agrees, whatever the school is, wherever it is, and we're going to run a tuck shop and we want the kids to try and make it last a week and see what kids spend it in a day and what kids buy a chocolate bar every single day. Like, run interesting products like that. Projects like that.
Yeah.
And then that would get them into, oh, yeah, I bought a chocolate bar Christmas, and everyone's still got a chocolate bar at the end of the week because I've spent all my money on day one. And it would just, it might be something that sticks with them.
I think so. Because also, life. What you've said there about some kids spending it one way and some another, I think that everybody's got their money personality as well. Because with my children, I can already see differences from some of them who are happy to save up money and some of them where it burns a hole in their pocket and they're like, I want to save up for this. But actually, do you give your kids pocket money?
I give Brody now, he's hit 10, he's got a GoHenry card and he gets £2 a week on that.
And do you think the digital approach to money for kids gives them a good understanding of, because I did the same sort of thing and I, for me, I think it was a stupid thing to do because I think before I did a digital app version of their pocket money, I would only do it when they remembered and then suddenly it goes out of my account all the time and they don't notice it half the time and then it comes out again because they just don't have any sort of idea of like the reality of what that money is.
Well, I do agree with you, but I also feel like we're in such a digital world that
by
the time
they're
older, they're probably going to be cashless, which is why I've done it. But it's interesting because Brody does say to me, what's on my GoHenry? And he's like, oh, I'm saving it up. And he wanted this jumper in Zara. It's the first thing he's bought. Because he went, can I get this jumper? And I thought it was horrible. It was, I just absolutely hated it. I went, absolutely not. It's absolutely disgusting. Have you got my GoHenry card on you? And I went, yeah. And then he went, well, I'm going to buy my jumper then on that if you don't want to buy me. And I thought, how can I say no, really?
Because it's for him.
And I went, but I was thinking, oh, I really don't want you to wear that with me. So I was like, but it's really horrible. He's like, well, I really like it. So I was like, okay. And he went, how much is it? And I think it was like, I think it was £18. And he had about £22. So he's like, I've got enough to buy it. And he went, right, I've got £3 in front. I'm going to save up now for, well, I can't think what he's saving up for now. He said he was saving up for Prime, but now he's got one. Hopefully I'll get him off that subject again. But yeah, it was interesting to me that he did work out that he did have his own money. And I see his little face. He was really proud at the counter. You know, like when he went and touched it and he walked out of his little bag. And he did look really, really happy about it.
He'll always remember that, I reckon.
He has already said to me, though, that such and such gets £5 a week or such and such gets £10 a week. And I was like, well, £2 a week at 10 years old is more than enough money, Brody. That's what I'm paying you. I don't care what they get.
Yeah.
And then I always say to him, well, what about the other kid? You told me he only gets £1 a week. You don't mention him. And he starts laughing. Then he goes, oh, yeah. I go, well, because he goes, oh, such and such gets this. You don't pay me that. And I go, okay, I'll pay the same amount as the other kid. And he's like, oh, no, I don't want you to do that. Oh, because I get less. I said, no, but if you want to be like the same as your mates, Brody. So I try and sort of devil's advocate him. And he's like, all right then. So I'm like, oh, if you want to be the same, I'm going to pick that kid because that kid gets less than Brodes. And he's like, all right then, Mum.
That's so good. That's so good. Beating the brain game, as they say.
Yeah.
He sounds like he's quite into his fashion. I'm counting like high tops and the Gucci handbag and the jumper. And I think he's quite into his look.
Well, he goes through things. Now it's like football and he wanted a football kit as well.
Oh, that's expensive, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, they are.
And when they're older, have you thought of like when they're going to be, okay, financial independence? Are you going to encourage them to get jobs when they can and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have them washing my car in another year. I've got Bronte washing down my paintwork later and she's four now. She better start working. I want a return on investment. I'm money mum, for goodness sake. I didn't push them out for nothing. I better do. I'm thinking you've got five. I'm thinking how I can get them coming around working for me for some cheap labour. You've got an older one's going to be babysitting later. I definitely want them to get jobs. I do think that's really important. But I also as well, I want to encourage, I think because I do social media and I've got a job I love, I also want to, if they want to do something that is different, I want to encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to do what makes them happy. And if they work their butts off and they want to be a singer or they want to be a YouTuber, if they work hard at that, I would happily let them live rent-free when they're older, not give them money so they'd have to get a part-time job and let them do that career and do that for a couple of years if they worked. If they didn't, then there would be a different conversation.
Mm.
So I'm definitely up for, I want them to live a happy life because I don't want them, I'd love them to do a job they love because then it feels like you're not working. What's the saying? It's like you've never go to work if you're happy or something. The saying is,
exactly.
So that's really important to me. But yeah, I want them to have a first job and like save up for their first car and things like that. I do think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
We have got savings accounts for the kids that we opened when they were younger and we do put money away. But I don't want them to have that till they're 25. I don't think like 18, who knows, they could be really sensible at 18, but they might not be. And 21, I still feel now is really, really young. Whereas I think at 25, you've got more of an understanding.
Yeah.
So, I do want to help them where I can. But with the first car thing, I might do something where like, if they want a car, say it was £7,000, they've got to save up half of it and I'll give them the other half. Meet me in the middle, you see what I mean? So I think that's fair then. So I want to be fair and I want to help them and I love them and I adore them. And of course, I'd love to buy them everything, but they also do have to learn. And I think as well, I think I would give them a bit more later in life. So if I became majorly successful and I was worth loads of money and they were grounded and they had children, they were in their 30s and 40s, when they appreciate it, that's when I'd probably give them the money and be like, okay, right, look, I've seen you've worked really hard. I'm going to give you a big lump sum now because I know that you've done it for you, but I'm not going to do that at 17, 18, 19, absolutely no way.
That's so smart. I've said there's been a lot of things you've said that made me want to sort of slightly start again with some of the approaches I've taken with my kids.
Well, your kids are going to hate me. You're going to be like, oh, right, Jem says you can't have your money now till you're 40. They'll be like, we're basically dead at 40, Mum. Why have you gone and seen her today? She's not welcome.
And when you talk about the getting investment back for your kids, it reminded me when I was a kid and I'd go and see my dad, and because my mum and dad weren't together anymore, I'd see him every other weekend. And he was always getting me to do jobs. I just wondered what you'd think of the fact that he made me creosote his entire garden fence and I got a fiver. That's not good, is it?
I think he's a bit of a legend, really. I feel like I want to go out for a drink with him. Please, now. He sounds like my type of man. Is he single?
See, she's infectiously lovely, isn't she, Gemma? What a wise woman, such lovely company. And a little bit of a funny thing. I told that story about my dad getting me to creosote the fence and paying me a fiver. Well, Richard had to do a little edit there because by accident when I first said it, I said asbestos. I promise you my dad didn't make me asbestos the garden fence. That would be bad. And that would obviously, I'd obviously charge more than a fiver for that. Anyway, how do you feel about money? I have a kind of mixed relationship with money. Sometimes I feel, I try to be not too abashed about talking about it. I'm self-employed and I have to employ other people. So I have to be okay with talking to people about wages. And I'm a bit squeamish about it sometimes, but I've really made a point to try and say, you know, let's just be able to talk about money frankly. It's funny though, isn't it, how personal it is and how uptight it makes you when you start thinking about it. I mean, I've got really close girlfriends and we have never discussed how much either of us gets paid for anything. I don't know, it's just not part of the normal dialogue. I think it feels like a bit of a forbidden zone, a bit taboo really. Maybe you're better at it than me, I don't know. But I do hope after hearing from Gemma, you do feel you've got a little bit more of a handle on things, possibly. It can only help. Or it's just nice to hear someone talking so straight up about ways to make money work better for you. Yeah, and I think we're getting near the end of the series. Still a few more lovely guests to come. And I've started doing the next series as well, of course. But yes, we're actually also approaching the third birthday of the podcast. That's gone quick, hasn't it? Anyway, thank you as ever for your time. Thank you to Gemma for being such a lovely guest. And just as a side, thank you to anybody that's given me any nice messages about the new record. Even though I've been doing what I do for a really long time, I still get a little bit of a, you know, it does matter to me what people think. So everybody that sent me a little message and said something nice, it really, really counts. It's a bit like opening up your diary or something and getting people to read your entries. You just want people to think that what you've done is okay. So yeah, thank you if you buoyed me up. And I'm actually off to the circus tonight, as I said. And actually, oh, funnily enough, one of the people in the circus was a previous guest. Do you remember Amelia, who does the horses, acrobatics on a horse? So I'll be seeing her off to Giffords. And yeah, it's been a nice ending to half-term week. And off to do a couple of gigs this weekend. I'll be in Dublin tomorrow with Soft Cell and Heaven 17 and OMD. And then off to Mighty Hoopla on Sunday. And if you're hearing this on next week, well, of course you are. You won't be hearing it before. Sorry, what a silly thing to say. Then next weekend, I'm at the Cambridge Club Festival as well. And I'm also going camping with the kids on Friday night. Oh, my goodness. That will be an unrelaxing night. Don't know about you, but I can never really sleep in a tent. Anyone that's talking outside just feels like they're, like, right next to you in your ear. But they're really looking forward to it, so that'd be fun. All right, rambling over from me. Thank you so much. See you next week. Lots of love.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.